Welcome in, 9 o'clock. Jim Davis and the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Reportedly, Aaron Rodgers told free agent teammates Aaron Jones, well, he's, we don't know them directly, but supposedly they were among group, that Rodgers told Aaron Jones and David Bakhtiari and other Packer free agents, look, or and even guys considering playing for the Packers, look, you can come here if you want to, but I'm not going to be here.
But this is mostly the same thread as the Jerry. Maybe it's the same sentence. Hey, if Jerry Krause calls you, I'm not going to be here.
Because reportedly in text messages with teammates, that's what he called Brian Gutekunst, the Packers GM. He called him Jerry Krause, who, of course,
more of an insult to call him Jeff Breidich.
the last dance. Krause, the guy that got all the blame for blowing up the championship Bulls team. So, got some thoughts on that today. Avalanche, they have struggled in the third period. Last night, blew a lead, lost to San Jose. They are now, I believe, 4 points behind the Vegas Golden Knights for the West Division lead. So the Avalanche lose last
and
night.
And only one up on Minnesota, too, because they went to overtime.
So how concerned are you about the Avalanche and how they played in the third period?
Nuggets, more worried.
Well, concerned about it. It hasn't been a good trend as of lately. Nuggets get a really good win against, I know, the Knicks. It's weird to say a really good, impressive win against the Knicks, but that's a team that's playing really well right now. Tom Thibodeau has done an amazing job turning that
defense
situation.
They didn't play a lot last night, but they play defense now under Tibbs.
Julius Randle's played well throughout the course of the season for them. And the Nuggets get the win last night. I mean, shorthanded. You got 25 from Austin Rivers, who had a few things to say to the Knicks last night. Got a little chippy last night. So text or call us, 970-242-1340. Coming up, we'll go in the garage and NASCAR, Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. So, had a winner last hour for who is it today?
We did. You want to play the thing?
Yeah, let me go ahead and play it. Because I thought it was a great question.
Yeah, I did good.
He did.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
I felt like Anthony Rizzo this morning from last night. Didn't even follow through with the bat. Just put the hand up like, yeah, game winner. I was good. Gabe White is the correct answer. And Steve texting, Gabe White, obviously. It's like, obviously
it's Gabe White.
He was traded back and forth between the Rockies and the Reds, once in 2000 and once in 2001. He made his big league debut in 94 as an expo against the Rockies. The only time he won more than 10 games in a season, he went 11-2 as a Rocky in 2000. With a 2.17 ERA over 83 innings as a Rockies pitcher. Pretty good. That's his best season-long ERA.
Wish we could have cloned him.
Yeah, a lot. So,
great question, though. Good job.
Thank you.
And Steve, the winner, correct?
Yes, Steve, correctly identifying Gabe White.
Of course, Steve. Yeah, Gabe White. Of course it was Gabe White. I mentioned Rivers had some words for the Knicks last night. Let us not forget, remember, he was a member of the New York Knicks not all that long ago, and had a huge game, by far his best game as a Denver
100%.
Nugget. 25 points, 7-13, shooting 6-for-9 on threes last night. Nuggets beat the Knicks 113-97. And Rivers is telling teammates he was going to be aggressive in the game to try to get some revenge. Michael Porter Jr. apparently confirmed this. Quote, he talked to me extensively how difficult it was for him in New York. So he told me coming into tonight how aggressive he was going to be. He's going to try to get those dudes back. Rivers got traded to the Knicks by Houston in November, played only 21 games for the Knicks before they dealt him in a three-team trade in March. And then he got waived by the Thunder and then picked up by the Nuggets. Be nice if he felt that way every single game, right?
Yeah, can they play the Knicks in every round of the playoffs?
Or just tell him they're playing the Knicks, right?
Tell him they're playing the Knicks, right?
Be great if that was the case.
We talked yesterday about Kevin Love, right? About maybe going back to, was it yesterday or Tuesday? Maybe going back to the Trailblazers?
Well, going to there because he's from Oregon.
Yeah. Trailblazers made a stop in Cleveland last night.
Uh-huh.
141-105. Picked up a win, went home. Kevin Love had 18 points, 8 rebounds. Not bad in 25 minutes. He was negative 45 in the plus minus.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Oh, my Cavs just got wrecked. It was bad.
They have returned to cadaver form, haven't they?
Yeah.
Sadly for
they
you.
They got a little bit of fight. Colin Sexton's great. He could be great. You know, you got Kevin Love. They got some pieces there, but... Man, they're not good.
They gave up 141 points last night. Yikes.
Carmelo had 16 off the bench last night.
Oh.
Enes Kanter, 18 off the bench. It was bad.
It was a bad night last night.
I checked in for maybe like 3 minutes. I'm like, nope, I'm going to waste my time on this. I'm out. Go back to the Indians Royals where Angel Hernandez was at it again. 2 nights in a row.
Oh, yeah, Angel Hernandez.
When you can piss off both teams in the span of 24 hours, you're doing something.
He admitted this is during the Indians-Royals game.
Yeah, this was Tuesday.
Yeah. That he admitted he essentially guessed on a play in the bottom of the third that had to be overturned due to his mistake. He said he was blinded by the outfield scoreboard.
He was blinded by the light. He was made for man's earth band.
Exactly. Roll another deuce or whatever the line is. Yeah, he blinded by the scoreboard. That's rich.
Like, the play was barely over, and whoever was behind the dish Tuesday night, I can't remember who it was calling everybody together like, this is wrong.
And I guess Hernandez looked extremely confused.
That's his default position, yeah. Though. That's the thing.
Whoa.
And then last night, Jose Ramirez, okay, maybe he got hit, maybe he didn't. There was a balk call, which is a questionable. I mean, the dude, it kind of looked like he was leaning, but you had to almost Zapruder film it.
Right.
And so Mike Matheny comes out. He has to be held back. Pitching coach gets tossed.
Cal Eldred, the former big leaguer.
Yeah. And then Brady Singer, the starter, he's coming off the mound, and for all the highlight shows, they pixelate all the curse words. They just left it. They didn't even bother just pixelating the curse words over the lips. They just left it pixelated because he was not very happy either. Oh, he's at it again.
Because Matheny got tossed. Eldred got tossed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Singer called for the balk. One out in the sixth. Batter later. Royals bench coach. And now your acting manager, Pedro Grifol, left the dugout to go get Singer. And then that's when Singer started saying something.
Singing.
Angel Hernandez started singing. And
like a rap song, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Definitely gangster rap.
Yeah.
And jawing at Hernandez. And so he got tossed as well. But man, so
Hernandez had the bunny ears last night, though.
So Tuesday screws up a call massively.
Yeah.
And then... I love the explanation. Okay, this is from Tuesday. Our goal was to get the player right, and that's exactly what we did. We talk about this. Replay is an extension of what we do out there. As you saw, I got basically blinded by the outfield scoreboard. The pixels of the lights were as clear as white can be. I was trying to make out what happened there.
He's a walking challenge right now. He is so bad. There's a game earlier this year where he missed 20 pitches, like not even borderline behind the plate. He just flat out missed 20 over the course of a game. That's just this year. And remember when he sued Major League Baseball? The judge dismissed because he's like, yeah, all the evidence they gave me points to the fact that you're just not very good. Essentially paraphrasing the judge.
And here's Tito. Terry Francona.
I love Tito.
Oh, he goes... Man. Why is it always happening when you're here? That's what he said.
He was out there. That's what he said to Angel Hernandez. Why does this always happen when you're here?
Oh.
Which is great. I'm surprised he didn't get run for that.
No kidding. Francona said, we knew it wasn't a catch. Everybody, I think, knew it, but Angel.
Yeah.
Oh.
You could see he kind of did like the,
out?
Question. If you can have a question mark with body motion, with body language, right? That's exactly what he did Tuesday night.
Oh, is he clearly the worst official in sports?
Yes.
I can't think of anybody in the NBA that's that bad. NFL that's that bad.
Like, it's not even crooked, right? Like, yeah. Tim Donaghy was crooked.
He's a crooked guy, yeah, but...
he's just bad.
And just every time he works a game, it seems like something bad happens. He makes a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and the officials have not had a good week or so in Major League Baseball. They haven't had a good... like, the thing with the Phillies and the Nats, I think it was, and then you had the Phillies where supposedly somebody ran out of the baseline by running in a straight line, where he didn't deviate course, and they called him out, and then they hit a seat in the front row and bounced back onto the field, and they called it a double because they couldn't differentiate between the seat and the wall. They've had a rough week, and it's either Angel Hernandez screwing somebody or the Phillies getting screwed. That's what it seems like just the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, look, Terry Francona is right. Every time Hernandez works a game, something bad happens. Yeah. At some point, how is he still working in the league?
How does he keep getting jobs?
Isn't
there somebody at the AAA level that has 2100 vision?
You would think.
That can at least see through a doorway? Who's not going to be blinded by a scoreboard?
And then the thing I love about it is that's why we have replay, right?
We got the call right in the end, obviously.
So when I screw it up, they've got a way to bail me out of this whole thing. Oh, boy.
He's a walking challenge right now.
He is a walking challenge.
And kind of Angel Hernandez related. Remember way back in the day when he threw out Steve McMichael at Wrigley Field?
Right.
Because Mongo was doing the seventh inning stretch song and he called out Angel Hernandez over the PA. That was great. But Mongo McMichael came out, I think it was a week or two ago, fighting ALS.
Oh, sorry to hear
There's
that.
There's a GoFundMe out for him, and it's getting to that time to where it's starting to take things from him, and it's not going well. And I read that, and it was very sad because he was, great character as a football player, but also he was a pro wrestler there for a while with Kevin Green.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, spent some time mm-hmm. as a professional.
He was
wrestler.
A member of the Four Horsemen for a while in the 90s, and kind of sad to read that.
It's very sad. Yeah, of course. What you have, Kirk Gibson,
mm-hmm.
it's been battling dementia as well. That's just so sad. All right, 9:13.
A lot of these legends now start from like my childhood, right?
Right.
85, 88, I was a young kid, but.
Yep, some of those guys are now.
It's a bummer for sure.
Seeing some of these horrible things happen to them. I want to get back to the text line going from Terry today. If Rodgers comes to Denver, does he have to ask Charlie Johnson if he can wear 12? Well, it's not retired, so I don't think he has to, Terry.
No, because some other dude for the Broncos wearing it. I don't think he asked. It's just some dude. Let me look. See who wore it last year.
Let's see. Paxton Lynch wore it previously, if memory serves me correctly.
Oh, so does he have to ask Paxton Lynch?
No, I don't think he has to ask Paxton Lynch.
Okay, nobody wore 12 last year.
Yeah. Because I think I looked that up yesterday, and that nobody's... But like I said, it's not retired, so...
Right.
So, Terry, I don't know if that was tongue-in-cheek or not. No, I don't think he has to call Charlie Johnson. Which I didn't realize Charlie Johnson, who really, when the Broncos got him, former Cardinals quarterback, Oilers quarterback, when he came to Denver in 72, he was like the first really good. I mean, Trpuk had the early, first year.
Right.
He was a coach, and they had him come back and play. But he wasn't as good as Charlie Johnson was. Charlie Johnson had a little more success in the NFL. And I remember when they got Charlie Johnson, it was like a big deal because he was considered by far the best quarterback they'd had in quite some time.
So there's a guy that's currently on the roster with the number 12. If you've ever heard of this person.
Okay.
Trinity Benson.
Yes.
I have not. But before him, you had Paxton Lynch, Andre Kalb, Matt Willis, Dominic Hickson, Charlie Adams, Gus Frerotte, Chris Miller, obviously, naturally.
Right. So, yeah. But Charlie Johnson, by the way, he was a professor. He was a college professor at, I'm trying to think where he ended up, where he taught.
He's got the highest approximate value of anybody to wear 12 for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
Joe DeVito has a negative approximate value.
He was an engineering major at New Mexico State, got a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering, continued to build up his academic resume, got master's and doctoral degrees in chemical engineering at Washington University in St. Louis when he was playing there for the Cardinals, and then he was the head of New Mexico State's chemical engineering department back in 2000.
Nice.
Briefly, he was the interim coach of the New Mexico State football team back in 2009 when they fired Hal Mumme. So he stepped into that role.
And led the chemical engineering department. Two things you don't often put in the same sentence.
Exactly. The chemical engineering department head ends up coaching the football team. Yeah.
I got to create a nitroglycerin supplement, and I can't do practice today. Somebody, assistant coach, is going to have to.
Also got a text from Jared. This is about Bill Schmidt. We played the clip of Bill Schmidt earlier, talking about analytics, and was kind of dismissive of it. He said he sounded like someone, let slow pitch softball guy build a team.
Pretty much, yeah.
Kind of had that feel. Definitely did. All right, 9:17. We'll go in the garage and NASCAR, Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Just a couple things I want to mention. That it's time for the 36th annual Kite Day. Kite Day is coming up this Saturday. Yep, it is back. Of course, we didn't do it last year because of the pandemic, but it's brought to you by Grand Valley Power. It's this Saturday from 10 until noon, right across the street from us at Sherwood Park. First 600 kids will get a free kite along with a bag full of goodies. There'll be vendor booths and first responders. There'll be bump and jumps out there as well. I want to thank Grand Junction Parks and Rec and Metagold for it, but Kite Day is back this Saturday, 10 until noon over at Sherwood Park. We always get a ton of people that show up, but kids come out for that. So make sure you get to it this Saturday, 10 to 2 at Sherwood Park. I also want to mention that tomorrow on the program, Todd Kayspear, now Rifle Bears football coach, will join us.
Nice.
The 3A semifinals this weekend against Glenwood Springs. He'll join us in the program tomorrow. But also tomorrow, we'll pick our whiner of the week. So start thinking about that today. Aaron Rodgers was the whiner of the week last week.
Interesting.
So, who wins it this week? Send your text in tomorrow with your whiner of the week. Text it in tomorrow for a chance to win a bottle of Talon wine from Talon Winery. Great stuff. Appreciate James doing that again. So, whiner of the week brought to you by Talon Winery. That is tomorrow. We'll pick a winner at 9:20. I'd like to give you a little more time to get those in. 9:20, we'll pick a winner tomorrow for that right here on the Jim Davis Show. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more on the Team Sports Network.
Who do I listen to?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader.
Whoever suggested that has got to be smoking crack and plenty of it.
Whoa.
The Team.
Welcome back. Jim Davis along with the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios. Most trusted name in automobiles. See if we got anything else on the text line to check out today. Let's see.
I don't think we have anything new, maybe.
Hi, guys. This is Brian. Not a Broncos fan, but I think if they signed Rodgers, that luck would be out the door. Just what happened to Tebow when the Broncos signed Manning. The lock. I think it put luck on there, but you meant Drew Lock.
Yeah.
Nice job of
autocorrect. Got him.
Yeah. I think that's kind of obvious if Rodgers comes to Denver, if that does happen, Drew Lock's done. And he could very well be part of a deal that sends him to Green Bay. If you're the Packers, would you want Drew Lock? You've got Jordan Love, you used a first round pick on him. But what if Jordan Love doesn't pan out? Lock might be a good insurance policy. Potentially.
Well, let's also put this in perspective. if the choice is between Peyton Manning and Tim Tebow, or the choice is between Drew Locke and Aaron Rodgers,
There's no choice.
The easiest decision in football. I mean, it's not. They're not some aggrieved party who got screwed, right? I mean, we've talked about this for now almost a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the easiest football decision to make as a player personnel guy when faced with the situation of two quarterbacks. It is a guy who will forever be enshrined in Canton versus a guy who has to buy a ticket to get in.
Though Timmy might be on the Jags roster this year, so we'll see what happens. Not as quarterback, though.
No.
Maybe, you know, a Taysom Hill slash kind of guy. No, and look, and even with Manning, there was the doubt about the arm strength because of the four neck surgeries. Mm-hmm. I mean, he came in. Rodgers would not come in as damaged goods.
No, but Manning, even with all those question marks,
it still was not up for debate.
No, it's Peyton Manning. You give him the chance.
He will immediately, even if his arm strength is diminished, be better than what you have now,
mm-hmm.
or at that point in time with Tim Tebow.
Just look at his last year.
Yeah. There's... And so, like I said, Manning, there was that slight concern about the reason, obviously, that the Colts walked away from him is because of the neck surgeries. And still, even then, even with the uncertainty of that, it wasn't even
right
up for debate.
And they had a guy coming, too, that was pretty good. Not that they had him, but they were either going to get Luck or RG3 because they were just awful.
They were going to, you know, because they went, like Manning got, what, you know, had
4 and 12, 3 and 13, somewhere around
there.
Yeah,
the surgery, and so, yeah, they I think, what, they won one or two games that year that Manning was out?
Two.
Yeah.
2-14.
So they're in a position to draft his replacement, which they did with Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they're going to have their answer for a long, long time, and it didn't turn out to be a long, long time in the case of Andrew Luck.
I love some of these numbers. Yards, offensive rankings. Third, second, third, fifth, ninth, fourth, 30th. Oh, that must have been Manning's year that he was injured.
That must have been the year he got hurt. Yeah.
With who, Matt Painter? Curtis Painter as the quarterback.
Yeah.
He went 0-8.
Former Purdue Boilermaker, I believe.
I believe so. You know who won the only two games for the Colts that year, and it was not Kerry Collins? He went 0-3. Dan Orlovsky.
Really?
Yeah.
The Danimal there.
Running out of the end zone punching bag.
Might have been his shining moment, right?
Yeah, the only two games he ever won as a starter.
Wow. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Brian, yeah, I mean, it's... Look, if Rodgers comes, Drew Locke is...
He's gone.
He's not going to stay there and going to...
Rodgers' time.
Rodgers going to mentor him and all that horse crap. That's not going to happen. What happens with Bridgewater, though? Bridgewater stay there as the backup?
Probably not.
Or do they deal him? Maybe that?
They might deal him, but I think the guy that's your backup is Brent Rippon. He's just going to kind of hang out. He's there. He can come in. We've seen it. He's competent. He can come in and play if necessary. Because if you lose Rodgers, unless you're like week 15 or 16, you're probably not going anywhere anyway, you know, to injury if you lose him to injury. And then you just kind of let Rodgers play until it's over. You don't dare draft the replacement.
Why do I just get this feeling, though, as much as we're, you know, as a Broncos fan, you're giddy about this and the potential. And look, and I'm giddy about the potential. But then I consider what reality is.
Yeah.
I think they find a way, either he retires and he's done, which could very well happen for him, even though he said he wants to play in his 40s. You know, the Jeopardy thing seems to be something he is truly passionate about and interested in. And the numbers were good ratings-wise when he was hosting that. I think they fix the problem. I think they find a way... For Rodgers just to be there and coexist with Gutekunst, and they just finish, they stay together and finish out this run with him in Green Bay until he retires.
Apparently this morning on Dan Patrick's show, which you can catch coming up this afternoon, so spoiler alert, Adam Schefter has clarify the timeline of this whole situation. He says this was not a breaking report, but an accumulation of information, which only Schefter can get away with that alliteration. He said Aaron Rodgers and Rodgers' camp was not the source of the story. He did tell DP that he chose to post it on draft day, but it is based on info he's been gathering since the season ended up until draft day. So that's a little different. That's not Aaron Rodgers is petty enough to leak this on draft day. That reshapes the story a little bit, for me anyway.
Because I think we talked about it earlier today. Schefter, you know, essentially said, look, this was not Aaron Rodgers getting this out there and talking about it.
So this makes me think this is more Packers trying to mess with the credibility.
But the timing of it, though, for Rodgers putting this out there kind of made more sense, right?
Yeah.
Because it makes teams think, hey, you know, like the Broncos, they're sitting at 9. Maybe they need to think twice about drafting a quarterback because they could get Aaron Rodgers. It made, to me, it announced that, hey, I'm available, and some of these teams that would fit my criteria,
right,
like being out west, teams like the Broncos, where you go, hey, look, I want to be there. I don't want to play for the Packers anymore. Just letting you know, whatever decision you make about the 9th pick, you may want to rethink that. Right. About who you get.
Or anybody. Oh, yeah. Niners at 3 or whatever.
Whoever. Yeah. Exactly. And for the Packers, I'm not sure exactly other than making Rodgers look bad.
It could cut his legs off with he's going to come out. He's going to want out. He's looking for a trade. This is the type of guy you're actually getting.
I guess that's how it benefit the Packers. That it makes him look like a difficult person to deal with. And do you really want to deal with this guy? So I guess maybe, you know, both sides, I guess, now that I think about it, probably could have benefited from it coming out. But we're also hearing that the Packers didn't do that. It didn't come from them.
Right. I'm trying to figure out who it actually came
from. Did it come from a guy like, I don't think this is him, but like a Bakhtiari or Jones?
Did it come from the same text chain as the Jerry Krause and hey boys, don't re-sign here if you're coming to play with me type? I could see this is all from the same thread and the same source.
It's kind of like what I talked about earlier with Rodgers kind of building, having this checklist of, yeah, they did this and I didn't like that. They traded Kumerow and I didn't like that. They drafted Jordan Love and I didn't like that.
It's like he's on his iPhone. He's got a notepad.
Right.
And he just writes everything down.
And that's starting from day one that he built this list of grievances that he has against
the Packers. They made me ride the stupid bicycle at summer camp or whatever.
What the case may be. But I still think all this, though, centers around the drafting of Jordan Love. Does it not?
It all goes back to that, absolutely.
Because this is where he expressed his unhappiness. His displeasure with them drafting his replacement.
That's ground zero for this, absolutely.
Yeah, I think if that doesn't happen, he's still probably not thrilled with everything the Packers do, and he probably still not thrilled with Gutekunst as the GM. But I think he's in a far better place. And this certainly, we wouldn't be talking about him coming to Denver or the Raiders or anybody right now if they don't draft Jordan Love.
And I'm not even sure it's just the drafting. They traded up to get Jordan Love, one.
Yes, that added to insult.
Essentially got a text 5 seconds before the pick was announced that, oh, hey, by the way, if they call him, you know, it's welcome to the NFL draft. The Cincinnati Bengals are on the clock, or whoever it was, because they drafted him last year, right? Or 2 years ago. I don't remember.
Jordan Love was
2020, I mean.
Yeah, because he was obviously on the roster this past season. Right. So
whatever draft it was.
Anyway, it would have been the draft last May.
If when the draft opens and Goodell is sitting there in his easy chair in his basement.
Right.
And somebody from the Packers says, hey, just a heads up here. We're working on some things. We are looking at a protege. Doesn't mean you're out the door. Doesn't mean we're ready to move on. But we're planning for the future while trying to compete. I think it's not even a problem at that point. I think the problem is the fact that they traded up to draft a quarterback and didn't bother to tell the guy that was there, a notoriously petty guy, that they're doing this.
A guy coming off a season where he led them to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
And then does it again after they draft Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with Rodgers, there's a lot of things that have accumulated here in terms of things he's unhappy about. But I don't think those add up nearly to what you just talked about.
Right.
Trading up to draft his replacement and not telling him they were doing that until essentially it already happened. I mean,
I mean, they had put the card in and it was like, did anybody tell Aaron that we're doing this? Oh, crap. Real quick. Somebody shoot out a text. They probably spelled his name wrong. Jerry Love. Because they were trying furiously to type before Goodell announces the pick.
Right.
From his high top bar table or whatever.
Yeah, one more Rodgers related thing before we move on here.
Rodgers!
We said that already.
This guy double checked!
I know he said that. Like, we're not going to talk about Rodgers anymore. But here we are talking about Aaron Rodgers. Jim, along with the Buckeye boy on the Team Sports Network, Mike McCarthy knows Rodgers obviously very well. Now, McCarthy, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Knows him well and does not have to deal with him.
And does not have to deal with him anymore.
Best of both worlds.
And so, Mike McCarthy was asked through The Athletic about where things are with Rodgers and the Packers right now. Because, like I said, he has a unique perspective on dealing with number 12. McCarthy says, I think it's like everything in this business. I don't think anything ever surprises you, and I think things like that go on. Conversations are always going on when it comes to player acquisition. Obviously, everyone knows the impact that Aaron Rodgers has made on the Green Bay Packers, but I didn't really give it much thought. I haven't seen anything happen, so it's a good news story. Jerry told me when I got here, all news is good news. Jones added, let's see, for Jerry Jones, I told him that I found it sometimes better to stir a little stuff up than it is to make it run smooth, and we'll go with that. So, Jerry Jones likes seeing the turmoil in Green Bay? He likes
Sounds like Jerry Jones likes seeing turmoil, period, no matter where it's at.
See the Joker? He likes chaos everywhere? He's an agent of chaos?
Or he likes Eric Bischoff's book, Controversy Creates Cash.
Could be. Mike McCarthy, I'm sure, probably likes seeing his former employer go through this right now.
It's kind of especially the way that went down.
And probably McCarthy's like, see, I told you so. I told you how tough he is to deal with. You guys didn't believe me. You thought it was my fault. That things went badly.
Yeah.
You should be blaming that guy, too. Okay. You know what, Jerry? You just need to worry about your damn football team, okay? You got enough of your own problems.
Oh, he needs to let somebody else worry about his football team.
Yeah. All right, it's 9:37. Let's quickly get to this day in sports history. 1978, Affirmed wins the Kentucky Derby en route to the Triple Crown. Steve Cawthon. At that time, he was like the superstar jockey back in the 70s. Steve Cawthon, the jockey for Affirmed back in 78. Also, 1998, rookie Kerry Wood ties the Major League record with 20 strikeouts. Remember who he did it against?
Was it the Rangers, was it? I feel like it was an interleague game.
It was an interleague game, and you're very close. Houston.
Oh,
because they, well, Houston was still, no, they're still National
98,
League.
98, they were still National League.
They're still National League at that time, so it was not an interleague game. Now. 2006, Barbaro storms in the lead at the top of the stretch, wins the Kentucky Derby back in 06.
That didn't turn out well.
2010, yeah, no, it did not. 2010, thanks for bringing that up. That's sad. Johan Franzen sets a Red Wings playoff record with 6 points. Natural hat trick. In 3 minutes and 26 seconds of the first period, he did it.
Wow. That's pretty
playoff
good.
Playoff record. The Red Wings rout the Sharks 7-1 in the Western Conference semifinals. Also on this day, one more thing, 2018, Marc-Andre Fleury makes 28 saves in his fourth shot out of the playoffs in the pipes for the Vegas Golden Knights, going to the playoffs in the Stanley Cup final in their first season in the league.
I know we got to run, but I got one more this day in sports history.
Okay.
It was the birth of someone that apparently 23 members of the Baseball Writers Association of America did not think was a first ballot Hall of Famer. 90 years ago today, Willie Mays was born.
That's right. The Say Hey Kid.
Yep.
His birthday today.
Happy birthday to Willie Mays.
We'll have a little more on Willie Mays. Yeah, still with us. We'll have a little more on Willie Mays coming up in garbage time. All right, 9:39, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll go in the garage with NASCAR Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. That's up next on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
They're a lot of fun.
The Jim Davis Show.
They're idiots.
Say what?
On Colorado's sports leader, the team.
Now, to anyone out there who wants to go fast, anybody.
I want to go fast.
Like an oval, then we're going to drive straight, and then we're going to be turning to the left.
Green flag, get ready to go in the air. Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing, boys.
All right, it's time to go in the garage with NASCAR Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. Not just a better dealership, pricing, information, everything you need to know at MontroseFordNissan.com. All right, so joining us in the great state of Iowa, NASCAR Fred and J-Rod in the studio with me. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
All right, so last weekend, went racing in Kansas at the Kansas Speedway NASCAR Cup Series race at Kansas. What was the name of that again?
Jim, I feel like I missed a really obvious call on that one. The race was called the Bushy McBush Race 400, and it was run on Kyle Busch's birthday.
So, right there. It was right there in front of all of us, right? We should have been picking him.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, how did I miss that one?
We totally blew it. It was like it was meant to be. It was destined. It was foretold.
You know, and he was the one that was kind of not sandbagging. He sandbagged the day before and won that race with the Xfinity race, or the truck race. And I got confused. But then he kind of didn't really run that great for this race. But there again, he was there at the end for the Bushy McBush Bush race birthday present.
Yeah, and Kyle Larson kind of let another one get away. It looked like he might run off with that one, but faded just enough at the end that Kyle was able to take advantage of it.
So you look like
Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch is the second driver in NASCAR history to win on his birthday more than once. The other one being Cale Yarborough back in the 60s and 70s.
Now, wins on his 36th birthday, by the way.
Yep.
So happy birthday to Kyle Busch at the Bushy McBush Race 400. Oh yes, love that. Love that name. They need to make that the permanent name of that race. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Any surprises? You know, Harvick. Of course, finished second. Brad Keselowski, Matt DiBenedetto, Chase Elliott. Those are your top five. Any surprises from Kansas, guys?
I don't know that I'd call it surprises, but a couple of guys that we're going to need to keep our eye on, who have just kind of steadily been getting better here, being one of them, finished eighth. And also, second week in a row, both Richard Childress' cars finished in the top 10. Tyler Reddick in seventh and Austin Dillon in 10th. Reddick's got three top 10s in the last four races, so they're making some noise, too. So, like I said, not really surprises, but definitely some guys to watch.
You know, one I think is a kind of a surprise is Daniel Suarez in the 99. I mean, he finished 11th, which, you know, he's second-tier team. But there again, almost in the top 10. It's funny, Bubba Wallace and Eric Jones, both 25th, 26th. Bubba followed his old car into the top 20 there.
In the garage of NASCAR, Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. Go ahead, Fred.
Oh, I was just going to say that you're talking about the 99 team. That is the Stackhouse Racing. It's their first year, and it's not the first race that they've shown some promise, that they've kind of been up, you know, near the front. And I mean, there's been some times it's kind of pit strategy and stuff, but there have been some races where they really have run decently. And the same with the 23. Of course, that's got some muscle behind it. The 2311 Racing, they got the affiliation with Joe Gibbs, so that's not too surprising for them to run well. But yeah, really, definitely kudos to Suarez and his team.
All right, so yesterday they unveiled the next-gen models for the 2022 Cup Series. So they did that at the Park Expo in Charlotte, North Carolina, ushering in what they're calling the new era, the rebirth of stock. So with the Camaro, the Mustang, and the Toyota Camry for 2022 from those three manufacturers, Chevy, Ford, and Toyota. I guess, start with you, Fred, your takeaway from what you saw yesterday with the next-gen cars.
The first thing that caught me was just the look of the car. They look more like the stock cars. Part of that is, like we talked about before, they've got this carbon fiber tub inside, and they moved the driver over a little towards the center of the car, like an inch and a half or something like that. Because of some things like that, they're able to lower the roof line. They make the greenhouse a little bit smaller, which really helps it look more like the actual car. I really like that just from an aesthetic standpoint. There's some things are going to be radically different. The transmission, no more four on the floor. I mean, they've been running four on the floor ever since they started NASCAR. Now it's going to be a six-speed transaxle, the transmission and the rear axle, all one unit. But they're not going to use the flappy paddles on the steering wheel like the Formula One guys do. They're using a gear shifter, but it's a sequential transmission like a motorcycle. We're just go through the gears in order. But they said they want to make sure that they still have to take a hand off the steering wheel to shift, like on the road courses, to keep that element in it. But so that's going to be very different. The other thing that's really different is the wheels. The low-profile tires, and just one giant lug nut per wheel instead of five of them, like the way the Indy cars do it. So that's going to not only change the car itself, but it change pit stops a lot.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you guys have seen the new Mustang X, the electric car.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That does not look like the Mustang on the next-gen car.
No.
Sorry, but that's here nor there. We've been doing this for many years where the cars kind of similar look familiar, but they're really not right off the showroom floor. You bring up the wheel nut. You know who's manufacturing that is Richard Childress Racing. I got a whole list of 25 people that is a do-it-yourself, put-it-together kit car. BBS of America, the big wheel company that you can get your wheels for your cars, are producing the wheels for all teams. Roush Yates is bringing in the transaxle mounts, the shifters, bunch of stuff. Interesting thing, Visser Precision, which is the old Furniture Row Racing, Barney Visser, owner, he's making the control arms, the front and rear control arms for these next-gen cars. It's pretty interesting to check all the information that's built and the manufacturers in these cars for the next-gen for next year. Telling you, all these cars that are racing right now are going to be a dime a dozen. We can start building racetracks and racing them on our local Saturday night racing. They're going to go cheap.
There we go.
Yeah, probably pick up one of those for about 10 grand or so. One other thing that's big, I think, is they're going to the composite body like they've been using in the Xfinity series for the last couple of years. You can bounce it off the wall and keep going. That's the great part about that. With the steel bodies that you're using, you get into the wall, you're more than likely going to push that fender in on a tire. You'll have a tire rub. Your tire goes flat. A few laps, you're going to have to pit. Not necessarily the case with the composite body. So guys might be a little more aggressive, take a few more chances, knowing that you can beat that thing around a little more without damaging your own car.
You know, and it's interesting, just real quick, is, a lot of these guys, these teams build their own chassis, and they've kind of got away from it in the last couple of years. Now, specifically, these chassis are coming from one independent person where, like I said, it's a, throw this kit car together, and there's really no fabrication and stuff. Now it's just a bolt on, and let's roll, go to the racetrack.
All right, going to Darlington this weekend. Quickly, your points leader, Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., William Byron, Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, your top five. So it's off to Darlington, and Brad Keselowski has the pole at Darlington coming up this Sunday. Fox Sports 1, about 1:30 our time this Sunday. Fred, let's start with you. Predictions on Sunday.
I hear Kevin Harvick is lobbying to get the race name changed to the Harvey McCarve Race 400. No luck there.
Or the Kezzy Keselowski. Something, I don't know, but maybe for Keselowski, you'd like that. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
For the Casey McChase Race 400, yeah. Everybody's got their own ideas what would be a perfect name. Boy, last year, of course, as I was looking at what happened to Darlington last year, is that Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick, of course, they were winning everything in sight a good bit of last year. I really think one of those two is, neither one of those has a win yet this year. I just have a feeling Denny Hamlin is going to finally put it together this week and get his first win of the year.
You know, I think it's hard. Harvick won it last year, but I'm thinking Martin Truex might get his Darlington stripe win.
All right. I'm torn here on who. I'm gonna go with Harvick. I'll go with Kevin Harvick.
I think Fred's on the right track. I have Denny Hamlin with our friends at FanDuel.
All right, very good. All right, once again, that's 1:30 Fox Sports 1 this Sunday, the race at Darlington. Guys, always appreciate it. Thanks. Talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, that's In the Garage of NASCAR, Fred and J-Rod, brought to you by Montrose Ford Nissan. Not just a better deal, a better dealership. Pricing and information at MontroseFordNissan.com. All right, time to hop in the dumpster.
We're taking out the trash. It's garbage time on the Jim Davis Show on the team.
Oh, I love trash.
All right. This isn't really trash because it's about one of the all-time greats, but we want to quickly acknowledge what you mentioned earlier. Yeah, this is kind of like a leftover. Throw it in the microwave. Today, the birthday of Willie Mays, who is 90. He is the oldest living member of the Baseball Hall of Fame now. And you think about Willie Mays. I mean, he was, from a African-American athlete standpoint, I mean, before we had Steph Curry and Jordan, I mean, Willie Mays was a guy that just crossed a lot of racial lines as far as people who loved him, loved the enthusiasm, the say hey kid.
Yeah.
An extremely graceful, amazing outfielder who can forget that catch in the World Series, the over the shoulder catch. You okay?
I was.
What was that against, by the way?
Vic Wertz.
Okay. So, fantastic play. One of the best in baseball history. Hit for power, speed. You okay over there still?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
But
it's been 60 years. I should let it go.
I know. Let us celebrate,
yeah,
though, the greatness that was Willie Mays.
I've said it for years, and I stand by it. He's the best baseball player ever.
And he was, just like I said, the guy was poetry in motion, no doubt about it. 100%. One of the more graceful major league players. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. called him the godfather of center fielders. And a guy that, you know, people loved to stand around the cage and watch him at batting practice because he was dropping bombs. Great defensive player, the classic five-tool guy. And just had that personality that just, even if you weren't a fan of the Giants, you're probably a fan of Willie Mays because he was just that charismatic, likable, that flash, that big smile.
Yeah.
And just a phenomenal baseball player and an amazing human being. Happy birthday to Willie Mays, 90 years old today.
Absolutely. I mean, 660. Some of these guys, you don't realize that, you know, he's moving down the list of all-time home runs. But when he hung him up, he was second, right, behind Babe Ruth. And then Aaron passed him and then passed Ruth. And then he was third forever. And, you know, he's still right there when it comes to greatness in Major League Baseball. I still think he's the best baseball player to ever live.
The perfect combination. I said five-tool guy.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. All right, that's our show. I'll be in tomorrow with...
I won't be.
You won't be? Cake will be here tomorrow. So make sure you join us tomorrow. Todd Casebeer, Rifle Bears football coach. We'll talk Bears playoff football. They face Glenwood this weekend in the playoffs. Join us tomorrow for that right here on the team.